Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the We and Me podcast. We're really excited to bring you this guest this week. As some of you know, we've been tweeting about five-piece movie for quite a while, and you may have recently listened to Robert Paul Taylor, the actor who portrayed Brandon in the film five-piece. But today we have Matthew Roth with us. He is the creator of five-piece movie. How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Thank you again for joining us on this episode of the We and Me podcast. We do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the support.
Absolutely.
It's been really nice, you know, to have, you know, somebody living with DID in our corner. Because I, you know, before we filmed the film and before we even, you know, first put it out there, I had no idea that the community was so large and that the negative impact that the media and the film world had portrayed it as.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, I was completely oblivious to it, you know, because when I was writing the film and making the film, I tried to stray away from, you know, other films that cover the subject matter, which now I'm glad I did, because, you know, from what I've learned from you and other people in the community is that it's been such a negative portrayal that I don't think I would have gotten anything from it, you know, except, you know, bad influences.
Yeah. Absolutely. An example of that is, before we hopped on the recording, we were discussing the movie Split. Don't worry, everybody. This isn't going to be a whole long podcast about Split. But just to clarify, we were discussing some of the ins and outs of that. And one of the things that I had mentioned to Robert, too, was that, and then he didn't realize, but I'm curious what you think about it, just because you create them, like film and that. So one of the big problems with Split wasn't even the movie itself. It was actually months before the movie released and they were putting out the trailer for it. Because people, you go to a movie theater and you don't think about it. There's no warning because there's no description. You can't be prepared for what you're going to see in one of the trailers and the advertisements for the films. They just pop up and that's kind of the point of them, is to tell you about the film. So we had a lot of people reaching out to us around that time in crisis, and then hate messages, and so many, in fact, that we actually had to turn off our DMs. It's the trailer itself that caused a lot of damage for people. I bring that up because I appreciated what I had seen of Five Piece Movie, like the trailer, when you guys were first kind of putting those clips out on Twitter and social media.
Yeah.
I appreciated that, and I know that several people did as well within the DID community, because they're like, oh, well, that doesn't look terrible. And then I got, like, a message of 50 questions about it, and I was like, I don't know, I didn't write it, I'm not affiliated with them, I just connected with them on Twitter, so ask them.
Yeah, yeah.
Overall, it was a very good movie trailer and explanation of the film, because, as some of you know now, we have seen it. It was very encouraging to see that. So you guys did a really good job in that regard as well.
Well, thank you. I mean, because that's what we were going for. Like I said, I was a little oblivious to the portrayal that it had come before it. And when I, you know, got the idea for the film and I started writing it, and the way I was kind of seeing it on the screen was everything was very subtle. Like, and the more that I was learning about it, too, through reading and research and talking to people about it, was, you know, the changes weren't big. You know, when they were changing alters is
right.
The correct way to say it, correct? Yeah.
Switching. People say switching.
Switching.
Yeah.
Yeah, when people are switching, I mean, that was one of the things that I was most fascinated with as far as portraying it on screen, because I, you know, not to go back to Split, but, you know, from what I've seen, I haven't seen the whole film, but I've seen clips, and, you know, I see that he's changing outfits and changing costumes and you know, doing all these obvious changes, you know, this obvious switch, and I wanted to stray away from that as far as possible for this film. I wanted it to be all in the eyes, you know, and I
yeah.
One of the things when I was preparing the film, I can't remember where I came across it from, but somebody said, and who knows, I could have learned this from you after, you know, after connecting with you, after making the film, but, you know, some people were saying that even your mother, your father, or your partner, your wife, your husband, the changes are so subtle that they might not even notice it at times. Like, it's not obvious, you know, and I wanted to do that, and I wanted to, you know, filmmaking is all about the eyes and what they're telling the audience and what they're showing, and I wanted that to be the forefront of DID and the switching and everything like that. So
yeah, you guys did that very well. When we had spoken to Robert, he had explained some of the process that you guys had gone through to get these different parts alters, to get them to be who they were, some of the research that went into it, and then some of just the work that you guys did in camera was It seemed pretty extensive in that you guys, and like I said, audience, we've seen it, and you guys did very, very well. It is subtle. It's not this big, chaotic mess that some movies are. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get to the word, but mess, I think, is the best word that I can come up with right now.
That's what we kind of wanted to do with that was, you know, have it almost to the point where if you blink, you'll miss, you know, the switch, or, you know, you have to, we wanted to make a film that you have to pay attention to as well, and, you know, yeah, if you're not paying attention, if you look away, you might miss him switching, and, you know, you kind of lose the plot completely after that. And I have to attribute, you know, a lot of this work to my mentor, Martin Donovan. You know, he does a lot of on-camera work with actors. You know, it's all about the eyes and all about what you can tell without saying a word. And Robert had come from his group of actors, and the two of us, Robert and I, you know, with that idea in mind that we're telling the story with his eyes, you know, using as little dialogue as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we created each one of his different alters, five piece, you know, he has, you know, overall he has five personalities, including himself.
Right.
You know, if you can't tell from the title, but, you know, that's, I think it's obvious, but I also came up with it. So.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah. I think very well done and very true to life. There were a couple scenes in particular that really hit home for us, and the one that was my personal favorite that I think you guys did just great, I mean, perfection, was when he, quick spoiler alert, everybody, when he went to the fortune teller. I think that was perfect because he's, in this few minutes of the film, he's switching and they're all talking to this palm reader, this fortune teller. And I think that was so perfect and really beautifully done, honestly.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think everybody that has seen it and has worked on it, I mean, I think that's the scene that we're most proud of, for sure.
Because that's the one that could have gone horribly wrong, and truly, exactly. I would think that's the one that would have been most difficult to get through. I can't even imagine how many hours of work went into that, or days even.
We shot for a day in a psychic shop, in an actual psychic shop.
Oh, you did?
We redressed it so that we had it. Yeah, we had it. We kept, you know, a lot of the stuff. I mean, I thought when I first walked in, I thought it was perfect. I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, our production designers came in and they, you know, took out furniture, added a couple things. And, you know, and Natalie Sutherland, who plays the psychic, I mean, does an amazing job of bringing that out of Robert, you know, because that was one of the things, too, where after we had filmed it and after I had met you and everybody else in the community through DIT chat, there were a couple things that were said where, you know, they said it wouldn't, there's nobody that can just bring it out of you like that. And I was like, we have the psychic scene where, you know, she's the one that kind of, you know, and yes, I mean, she's kind of, we kind of do like a ethereal character to it where she's not, you know, she's of a high spiritual intelligence. So in that sense, you know, she's the one that's able to bring it out. But I was always kind of worried if that was true to how it really is. Like if there are people that can bring out the other personalities, the other alters.
I understand where you guys were going with that in the spirituality sense of it. It's not that it would specifically work that way for people with DID. For example, me, my system, one of my parts likes to toy with psychics and palm readers and tarot card readers. She thinks it's amusing the way that they manipulate people because she does it better than them. And that's not an arrogance thing. It's just true more often than not. So she... For me, for my system, if we went to a spiritualist, a palm reader, a tarot card reader, whatever the case is, they would not be able to do that with us because what they would encounter is they would encounter Jinx and she would pretend to be several other people if that's what the goal of this person was, and she would toy with them and then she would stand up and tell them they're an idiot and leave. But that's because of our backlash against certain things like that, because some of my parts look at that as manipulation and that irritates them.
For our scene, you know, we took the liberty of art, you know, we did it for the sake of the film,
absolutely, and it didn't bother me at all. I know that some of my other parts, they had seen it with me and it didn't bother us at all. We thought it was a very interesting and intelligent way to go about doing it, because it's still a movie. You still need to try and portray this for the audience in an intellectual and psychological way that is going to make sense to them, but it's also going to be accurate. And you guys did do it very well. I would absolutely stand by that and say that you did it very well.
Well, thank you. I mean, that really does mean a lot. I mean, I'm really glad we came, you know, pretty close to an accurate portrayal of it.
Yeah, you definitely did.
You know, it's one of those things too, where I don't know if you know this. I mean, I don't think a lot of people do, but you know, originally there was a psychic, or not a psychic, I'm sorry, a psychologist in the film, and it just became, you know, it became boring. It was like, okay, this is an obvious choice, and that's when the psychic idea kind of came, and I was like, well, what if he's just driving around one night and he happens to come across this shop and he's kind of drawn to it for whatever reason, you know, and I'm really glad we went that route because, you know, the psychologist stuff, you know, we've seen it in other films like that where, you know, they're bringing out the personalities and right. I really wanted to go for something different because we needed that scene where we show what it's like for him and yes. show each personality of his that come out.
Yes. So. And I think you did it in a very, intelligent way. I really appreciated that way. And no, actually I didn't know there was originally a psychologist in the film, but knowing that now I still think you went the right direction.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I didn't get very far with the psychologist. I mean, I think I wrote two or three different scenes and I just thought this is not working. I mean, it's obvious and it explains everything to on a very low level, you know, it's the easy way out and, you know, you have to give the audience more credit than that.
Right.
You know?
Right. I think that's the other thing about it too, that I appreciated about that particular scene was because we know many spiritual types of systems that would call themselves spiritual, not necessarily religious, but spiritual in that sense. So they have gone to psychics and palm readers and card readers and all of these different types of people. They do go to that because it's a comfort for them and it helps them believe that there's something higher, you know, like the higher power, the universe, however you want to word it, a god, whatever. Yeah. And I think that's one thing too, that I think a lot of people will appreciate. You can't please everybody, but honestly, you guys did that very well.
Thank you. Yes. I mean, that's really good to hear.
And the one other scene, and again, I'm not putting spoilers out here, guys. There's two specific scenes we wanted to talk to you about. The other one was Brandon is in the apartment with his girlfriend, and he starts playing the drums all of a sudden, and the neighbor goes ballistic.
Yeah.
That was such a beautiful scene. It was so good. It was easily our favorite in the entire film.
Oh, thank you.
Because that was just so incredibly accurate. And we actually had a very similar experience years ago. And it was just very, very relatable and accurately done because his partner, you know, your partner as someone living with DID is in a crisis like that, is desperately trying to get you to reconnect with them because they don't necessarily know exactly what's going on if there's not a diagnosis or if you haven't shared it with them yet or if you had, but you don't know. There's so many levels of complications with that, and you can really see her struggle with it too. It was very well done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, with that, I thought we needed somebody that knows. So that's where the girlfriend comes into play. And she knows, but she doesn't know what to do. And she's very, obviously, as you see in the film, she's very protective of him. And, you know, what he doesn't tell people, she doesn't tell people, you know, and she stays on that same level with him. Yeah, I mean, for that scene, that was a big scene to shoot. I mean, that took, you know, we went 9 or 10 times with that, trying to, you know, get all the elements correct. And it's a chaotic scene.
Very.
For sure. And, and I mean, there's a lot of information that's thrown in that scene, and that's why it needed to be, you know, just right. And, it was Robert's idea. You'll see in the film, and I know you've seen it, Erica, but you know, it was Robert's idea. He came to me with the idea of him already in the child personality, and he's coloring, you know, he's on the floor coloring in a coloring book, and he gets up, and again, he's that child, you know, one of his personalities is a child, and, you know, he just wants to get the drums right. He wants to be able to play good, you know, as he's in that state. you know, so he had ideas too. So once he started understanding more about what it was really like to have the idea, I mean, he was bringing ideas and we were throwing things back and forth, like, oh, this works, this doesn't work, let's try this. And I'm glad that scene comes across, because that was a really difficult scene to shoot. And
oh, I'm sure it. Yeah, it was fantastic. So one reason I know that it was increasingly, as the scene went on, relatable to us is because I began to dissociate. I began to feel myself from my body and feel other parts and that sort of thing, like I was watching the film from above myself watching the film. And because of years in therapy, I'm able to work with myself and my parts, and we're able to hedge that back some, and I can regain control of myself again and that sort of thing. But because that came up while we were watching the scene, I had asked our psychologist about it, and we were talking to our, you know, we were talking to our doctor about it, and asked some of my parts, okay, what was specific about this? And I ended up learning more about my own memories that I didn't have previously.
Wow.
So it was very relatable for some of my parts, specifically Jinx and Stevie, actually. It was,
wow, that's amazing.
It was a very, yeah, it was a very impactful scene. And again, I don't mean it in a negative way. Just to be clear to you and our audience, what I'm talking about is if I begin to dissociate to that degree to where I can feel myself being pulled from my body and I'm watching myself from above, now, at this point in my life, I'm almost 6 years into therapy, or just over 6 years into therapy now. And I don't look at that as a negative thing. I look at that as a warning that something is occurring. And it has either triggered somebody, but negatively or positively. It means that something has come up that is reminiscent of something else that I am not aware of. So I look at that not as a negative or even necessarily a positive, but something that I can now handle and something that I am now equipped to deal with and discuss and figure out. So that was very relatable and very well done. I can see it in my head still and hear it in my head in a very slow motion type way.
Wow.
Main point, it was a very, very well done scene.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. And I hope that is encouraging for other people, because the people in the DID community and trauma community at large, I have seen it. I have DID. And I can't guarantee you that it won't be triggering to watch that. So anything like this, please go cautiously if you're going to watch a film about DID. However, this was a very well done film.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So Matthew, can you share a little bit with our listeners why you wanted to do a film on DID?
Yeah, absolutely. My interest in it had stemmed back in high school. I remember there was a quarter where we took psychology, and DID had come up. And for, you know, we studied it for like a week or whatever the length of the chapter was in the book. I mean, we didn't do a lot of psychology in high school, and I wish that we did. I mean, that was the thing where I thought, this is really interesting stuff. I want to learn more. But, you know, they set up that you get, you know, one semester of it and you have to move on. And it's just like,
right.
This is really interesting. And, you know, during that time, you know, they showed us this video. I can't remember what it was. And I believe it was a woman on trial, and she was talking to her psychologist or her therapist, leading up to the trial. And, you know, she was switching. That's really all I can remember of it. I don't remember if we were watching it to see if it was I can't really remember much of it. I just remember her switching, and I remember this is really interesting, and you know, reading that chapter in it. And so, you know, around that time too, I was developing an interest in film, and I thought, you know, like, one day I'd really like to make a film about DID. And, you know, I always had this image of a man, which you'll see, you know, this is at the very beginning of the film. It's a man. Brandon is standing in front of a mirror, and he's kind of, you know, switching through his personalities, and you don't really know what's going on. Obviously, it's the very first shot of the film, so we didn't want to throw anything out there, but, you know, if you very subtle changes that you see in his eyes as he's going through, and it always kind of started with that image in my mind. And
yeah, that was very well done as well. And to be perfectly honest, I myself have gotten lost standing in front of the mirror, because I could see other parts, or I could feel them, and I didn't know what I was experiencing. So that also rang very true.
I came across that a lot through my research with the film. Yeah. You know, a lot of people would say they look in the mirror and not re- recognize themselves, or it feel like they were standing outside of themselves, looking at themselves, looking in the mirror. Yeah. And I think the mirror is such a it's a great device in a film too. So
oh yeah,
you know, obviously in Five Piece you do he's two or three times, three times I think, you know, we have scenes with him in a mirror, and each time it's something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of see the deterioration, or well, that's the wrong word for it, but you see his change. You know, you see him, there's a mirror scene right before the sidekick, and you see right. that he's definitely looking for some kind of answer, looking for some kind of hope, and, you know, that's when he goes out and drives around town. But yeah, to go back to your initial question, so, you know, I had always thought about this film, this idea for a film, and, you know, years had passed, and, you know, more years and more years and more years. And finally, you know, I had done one feature film at the time, and, you know, then I spent the next couple of years working with my mentor, Martin Donovan. And, you know, as I was learning more about acting and what actors can do, and, you know, the subtlety in the eyes, like I had mentioned earlier, I woke up one morning and I had this image of this guy that was going. I saw where he was going. You know, he was looking in the mirror. He has the ID, and he's going to band practice. And after that, it was just ideas started coming, and, you know, the idea of the five-piece band, and mm-hmm. and then I just, you know, and obviously, well, I don't know how anybody else works, but, you know, with me, like, once I've decided that this is going to be what I'm going to make, I go out and, you know, read as much as I can, and watch as much, you know, I watch videos on YouTube, and, you know, it is. I had to pick and choose what I was going to believe and what I wasn't going to believe. And
sure.
Also, too, you kind of come across common ideas, common thoughts, where it's like, okay, well, these two people are similar. Okay, there's another person that, you know, is the same way with DID. And, you know, once that started to happen, I thought, okay, well, this is the direction we're going to take it in. I don't know if I'm right. I don't know, you know, and again, I didn't know anything about the DID community at the time, and mm-hmm. and DID chat and Twitter, and I wish I had. I was just like, it sounds like it's a really subtle thing. Like, it's nothing like we've seen in the media. You know, it's not this monstrous superpower or right. whatever. It's subtle, and it's not obvious changes, you know. And again, like I said earlier, it's, you know, it's to the point where even your closest friend, your mother, your father, your, you know, your sibling, they might not recognize when mm-hmm. you've switched. So that's the direction we wanted to take. And once I kind of learned that, too, I thought this is what I have to make now. Like, that made me even more interested in it, because I love that, with an actor's eyes and where you can take them, and the idea that we're seeing it all in his eyes, the switching, you know,
yeah.
When it occurs, as opposed to these obvious physical changes or, obvious appearances that are different to show, oh, this is the new character. I thought, well, that's great that we don't have to do that, because I don't have any interest in that. I want to see that the audience can see him changing
right.
without doing anything, essentially. You know, obviously, internally, he's going through something, but
right.
that's what we wanted to do. And, you know, Robert had come on board at that time, and I think he talked about, originally he was asking about, I can't remember, I think it was on Showtime or Starz, but the United States of Tara.
Yeah.
He was asking if it was like that, yeah. And at the time I still haven't seen the TV series, but I was like, I don't know. I mean, I watched the trailer, I think, after that, or maybe the first episode. And,
yeah.
You know, we talked about it after, and I said, no, that's not what we're going for at all. You know, we're going right. for what you're reading on the page, you know, like this idea of, you know, and all the work that we had been doing at that time, where it's, you know, putting you in front of the camera, giving you ideas, giving you thoughts, having you switch different personalities.
Right.
Without going into the closet and pulling out a dress and being like, oh, I'm the female character, you know, I'm the female personality now.
Right.
You know, I never wanted to do that, so.
No, and I think that you guys did it very well, because the subtlety of it, I think people can relate to far more, as far as people in the DID community go. I think that they can relate to it far more. And beyond that, people who don't have DID watching the film, I think it adds psychological interest to it. Because, oh, okay, so... Brandon isn't Brandon anymore, and now he's the female character, you know, personality, but in mm-hmm. for the sake of the film, the character. It was, yeah, it was very well done. And yeah, I am familiar with US of Tara, and actually we have been contacting Toni Collette repeatedly for like months, because I'd love to talk to her about it. And no, you're absolutely right. It was on like HBO or Showtime or something like that. So they very obviously had to go to the extremes with a lot of things. But they're beyond that, like for the, I don't know, I guess to help the quote unquote dumb audience. That's how it felt for us when we were watching it. Like, oh, so you think the audience is really stupid. Okay. But it was, and that's a writer thing. That's not a her thing, you know. She portrayed it quite well in the way that she was given to do so.
Yeah.
And then the show just got, like, the series just became nuts and way out there and beyond over the top. And I stopped watching it. I think I watched 2 or 3 episodes of the first season. And then I caught, like, 1 or 2 episodes of the second part. And then I just gave up. But I know that one of my parts really liked the show. She's like, it's stupid, but it's really funny. But that's just because they're big Toni Collette fans. So I hope one day she'll come on and chat with me about what that was like for her. Because it's not just one movie. She had to become these characters for, like, I think it was like two full series that they did the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like 2 or 3 seasons. From what I had seen. And do you think that, so in that sense, is it like Split where it's damaging to the community or no? Was it a little bit more positive or a little bit more accurate? Or what did you think?
I'm not going to compare it to Split because from my experience, Split by and large was just far more damaging to the community because it was portrayed as like people like me will kidnap children, which is so, so astronomically unlikely because harming children is where DID comes from. And at least, almost always, at least one part in the system will know that. Likely, the majority of the system will know that, and they won't hurt children. So that was just ridiculous. With US of Terra, there were a lot of like amusing, comedic, hokey things. So it wasn't damaging in that way. It was like, we can appreciate poking fun at ourselves. Okay, we can. That doesn't offend us. I know that it offends some people within the DID community. But for us, if we can't laugh at ourselves, then we would go crazier. But the problems came later, apparently, in this series. Because one of the parts, and again, there are some accuracies to this, but they did it to the extreme. Is that some parts can absolutely be dangerous because they're trying to protect themselves. And one of the psychologists had overstepped, so one of the parts was trying to protect them from this psychologist, and it just got like really muddy and really messy and just chaotic. So overall, it was a comedy. Like it was a sitcom type show. And there were definitely accurate pieces of it, but if you want to find something that's an accurate overall portrayal of DID, I would suggest you skip US of Terra for your research purposes. If you're looking for a laugh, go for it, because it is. It's funny.
Yeah.
There was a lot of different ups and downs as far as something that's a bit more accurate as far as how the individual might experience DID, that was definitely Frankie and Alice with Halle Berry. She's another actress that we've sent messages to every once in a while. We send messages to anyone, actually, within the Hollywood community, however you want to say that. Within Hollywood, we send them messages if they've been a part of a film with DID or portrayed it, because I want to talk to them. I want to know if it had negative impacts on them psychologically, because you're talking like with Toni Collette, for example, that was a series. You know, she was in this different mindset over and over repeatedly within these different parts or alters. And then within these different traumas of this character that she was portraying, it can do psychological damage. So we're curious if it had any impacts on her, because a lot of her work is psychology based. She portrays a lot of different films that she does has a mental health theme to them. So I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And then,
and I haven't had a chance to listen to Robert talking with you, but did he, I'm assuming you asked him the same question, right? What did he say?
We did talk a little bit about that. He was saying that, no, it was a little difficult in some instances because he had to try and go through in his mind how and where these characters came from, the characters, not, again, DID community, characters in the sense that this is a film. So some of these characters that he was portraying, the parts, personalities, alters, there was trickiness trying to find who they were within himself. Do you know what I mean? He had expressed to me that he didn't want it to be like he was mocking or mimicking someone with DID. He wanted these characters to come alive. And having seen it, I think he did a fantastic job of that. But no, overall, he did say, he's like, no, it wasn't that. It was some days, he said, were much harder to film than others because he was really trying to get into that mindset. In certain scenes, when there's discussion of trauma and stuff, he was trying to stay within that character, but then keep it separate from himself type thing. So there was a little bit of a back and forth with it, he had expressed. But overall,
yeah,
no harm done, I think is how he put it.
Yeah.
But I am curious about that because there are some of these films that some of these actors are doing more than one thing. So filming gets postponed. They have to come back to it. It gets extended. And then there's Toni Collette again in US of Terra. That was a whole series. So she was doing that for a few years.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what the long-term effects could be on someone in that regard. And I understand that they're actors and it's their job, but that's my point. They're actors and that's their job. Look at some of the damage that has been done in Hollywood by some of the portrayals that these characters and actors, by some of the characters that these actors have portrayed. Jim Carrey is a perfect example of that when he did Man on the Moon. He became, I can't think of his name right now, but from the film Man on the Moon, he became that person. And went through the whole process to the extent that he was physically feeling like that person and struggling. So you're talking about like the duality of life and committing to a role that becomes tricky. And did actually he's spoken about it in documentaries that he's done and different interviews he's given that it did cause problems for him in some relationships and stuff like that.
I was gonna say, did you watch that? There's that documentary on Netflix. I can't remember what it's called, but it talks about his whole process with it. It came out, I think, about a year ago.
Yeah.
So he kind of channeled him to be on set, you know?
Yes. Yeah, he never broke character.
Yeah. And he, you know, he pissed a lot of people off.
A lot of people off. Yeah, he absolutely did. Andy Kaufman, that's his name. Andy Kaufman.
Andy, that's right. I was like Kaufman, and I couldn't think of the first name.
Yeah, I couldn't either for a minute there. But yes, his portrayal of Andy Kaufman, he became him. And it freaked people out. It pissed off, like you said, a lot of people. But yeah, I did watch that.
I mean, even the director, I remember he was having a difficulty with I mean, I think he almost gave up, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we've watched that documentary on Netflix, too. I can't remember what the documentary is called, but if you search Jim Carrey, it'll come up.
Yeah, what is it? Andy and Me or Jim and Andy or something?
Yeah.
I think it's teams, isn't it?
It's something like that, yeah. It's very good, but that's what I mean. Some of these actors, they go so deep into the character or the person, whomever, that they're portraying, that it does damage. And then you look at people like Heath Ledger, Robin Williams, who has, like, had all sorts of different things going on off and on throughout the years and that. And not that it was a character that he portrayed that caused a problem, but there you're in the spotlight and people know you as this make me laugh, you know, funny guy, that type of thing. And people don't take you seriously. Or it's hard to get help and all of these different things that occur. So I'm curious of the quick and then long-term effects of portraying certain things in film, especially when it comes to DID, because that's not one character, that's 12.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
And I mean, the thing was, too, with Robert, I think, and, you know, him and I had worked, I want to say, on three months before we shot the film itself, before we actually went to production, him and I worked for about 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I don't know if he mentioned anything about it, but, you know, I had him come over. You know, there's a chair, a camera. I would be behind the camera and filming him. And, you know, slowly we would develop each personality within him. And, I mean, that was going on for 3 months. You know, it was never, I don't think it ever reached that intensity that it was when we actually had to film and be on set. But, you know, I know he was living with these characters. And I say characters in the sense of the film, you know, they all have different names and are part of the character of Brandon that he portrays. And I know he was living with them for, you know, 3 or 4 months leading up to the film, and then we filmed for 2 weeks, and, you know, he even had to come back and do a little bit of ADR work and get back into that character's mindset. And even when we did poster, you know, those images of his face, you know, we came back and he had to go yet again and, you know, go back to those places so that we could, you know, capture that in a still photo. And as you see in the poster, we put them all together. And I think originally I released them one after another, you know, kind of around the time where we were just trying to get the word out a little bit, because I was really, and I think those were the pictures too that you had seen, and you know, you had said, like, this is, I see the differences, or however you put it, you know, you see that it's a very subtle look at it, as opposed to, you know, one character's wearing makeup or have, you know.
It was very well done and collectively well put together, and the imagery was very well done as well. Very well done as well. I speak so good today. But no, it was very well done. And we definitely appreciated the subtleness to Brandon and then these different alters. It was also well written. The character of Brandon was very well written. And again, because we know a little bit about how a script will read, that's also what I mean, like giving the credit to how you directed him and that sort of thing. It was very well done.
Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just, working with Robert was a dream. I mean, because he just went with it, too. You know, I gave him liberties, and he would try out things, and we would see what would work and what wouldn't. But, I mean, especially with that psychic scene, I think he hit everywhere. I mean, my editor and I think went back and kind of just cut out a couple lines where we repeated, you know, like what he just said, or, you know, you get those instances where you write it or you film it and you don't realize at the time that you're saying the same thing that you just said or whatever. You know, my editor was great in that too, being like, oh, we don't need this line of dialogue. You just said it, or this contradicts what was said earlier or whatever. But I remember, you know, when we filmed, I mean, Robert hit every line that I had written beat for beat, so I mean that always helps too.
Oh, I'm sure.
So when an actor is able to bring those words to life, exactly. And it, you know, I don't know if I was clear in this earlier, but when I had originally began writing the script, you know, I always kind of had Robert in mind. I had met him through Martin, and I, you know, I was always fascinated by his look and his way of portraying a character, and I thought he would be, you know, he'd be interesting for Brandon. And, you know, I think I was right, because, you know, I can't think of anybody else playing that role. You know, it was meant for him.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah. I agree with that. He did very well. He had the great expressions for it. He's very expressive in his face. Mm-hmm. And that was, it was very well done, and it came across very well when he, and again, we have D&D, so take that with a grain of salt, because for us, it was very clear when he switched.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the beauty of a film like that, though, is because this is the type of movie that people are going to be like, all right, I got to watch that again. Because you're going to miss things, like you said, and those are my favorite type of movies. When it's not just black, white, one, here two. It is, this is what's happening, and poof, here's the surprise ending that we figured you'd guess, but, you know, no big deal. I like movies that make me think.
Yeah. I love film that you have to pay attention to, and really just, and you might have to watch it a second time. I mean, there's so many of my favorite films now where I saw them, you know, for the first time, and I just thought, oh, I don't really get it, I didn't think it was good, but I'll go back later and watch it and be like, oh, this is brilliant. You know, I'm seeing things I never saw before. And even more so for films that you catch the first time and you go back and you know, you find more and more to appreciate about it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I like about movies like this. This is one of those kind of films for sure. And it's just well done. And I know that we keep repeating that, but it's true. It's just well done. And that was just very encouraging as far as movies with D.I.D. portraying D.I.D. go. Typically, I am portrayed as the heightened level of crazy madness or cowering in a corner, a mess, not surviving or functioning, or I'm some super beast monster. And neither is true. You guys found a good middle ground, and you made it entertaining.
Yeah, I think it works.
Yep. It definitely works. So do you want to share a little bit with our audience any upcoming projects that you can talk about?
Yeah, I do. I'm writing something right now that I want to film in Scotland.
Ooh.
It's another, I don't know if Five Piece was heavy or not, but it's like another kind of heavy subject matter about, and almost like it's similar in the sense that it's about, you know, two characters trying to find themselves. The idea is, and I'm still writing it now, so I'm still trying to figure out. So,
oh, okay.
Excuse me if I kind of ramble, but the idea is clear, but it originally stemmed from this thought of, you know, and I think everybody experiences this. I don't know, but of you're out at, you know, if you go for a hike in the park or if you're going out to the grocery store and buying food or whatever, it originally started with the idea of seeing the same people over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And what that means in the greater sense, you know, is there a greater meaning of it? Is there, you know, should you be talking to them? You know, like, why do you keep seeing that same person? And there's times too where you see similar people or you see the same person and you'll never ever put it together, but there's distinct individuals where you go, I've seen you before and I know, you know, you're 100% clear on it. And that's what the idea originally stemmed from. I don't know if you know, but in this past year, my fiance and I, we lost our baby daughter, Isabella.
Oh my God, no, birth. I didn't. I'm so sorry.
And I've decided to kind of make that a part of the script too, of losing a child and incorporating that into it. I know it's kind of talking in broad terms right now, but that's a part of the story as well. You know, so you're seeing these familiar faces. There's this couple that have just lost their daughter. And at the same time, I mean, I guess I'm giving away a lot of information about myself right now that you might not know, but I'm adopted as well. And there's this idea that the thing is that I've never really known like my bloodline. I've never met my birth mother or known who my birth father is. And ever since, you know, holding, you know, my daughter in my arms, it was a feeling that I had never felt before where, you know, it's like, this is, you know, I created you, you know, you have my blood in you. And I became very fascinated by that feeling. And so one of the characters in the film, he goes off to Scotland to try to find his birth father, who he believes after doing some research that he's found him to be there. And it's about leading up to that as well. So there's a lot of ideas going through it. I don't know, you know, at this point, what's going to stick or what's going to go away, but I think I've come, you know, with a concrete idea that this is the story that I'm going to tell. And this might sound confusing because I know I've been talking in zigzags and
no,
and
kind it of sounds,
all over the place, but those are the, sounds really those are good. The 3 points.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting and intricate story. I like I said, I enjoy stories like that where there's an actual story to tell, I suppose, is how I could say that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of that portrayed in film, and that sounds
I love, you know, and for me it's more than just a story or a plot, it's more about what these characters are experiencing,
right,
what they're going through, how they're feeling, and
right,
the internal journey as opposed to the obvious external journey that they're physically going towards, but what's going on inside and what can we capture from their soul through the, you know, through the eye of the camera.
You know,
I think that's why the camera was created and invented, so we can capture these moments in time, but, you know, trying to go that extra length of not just the moment of time, but the moment of that soul that you're looking at, you know, through the eyes. It's always fascinating what you're gonna catch.
It's really interesting the way you put that too. I can agree with that because for years we collectively, mostly my parts, but we worked as photographers in different capacities.
Oh wow!
So I do get what you're saying. It's very interesting. I look at some of that a little differently than some of my parts do. But one of their favorite quotes is from Dorothea Lange. One should really use the camera as though tomorrow you'd be stricken blind. I always liked that.
I do like that too, yeah.
Yeah, it's just sharp. And because of so many different things that had occurred in my life, you know, I have DID and a lot of different physical health problems and stuff. They've always kind of lived that way. They've applied that quote to most things that they do.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, I mean, nobody can ever take tomorrow for granted, you know. because we might not be here.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know what's coming next. So. And then that's the beauty of cinema, I believe. It's like you're capturing a moment in time. And I think that's a difficulty that we're going through right now is that, you know, everything's special effects and it's not real. But, you know, if you go back and look at some of these films from the 1920s and it's just the 1930s, you're capturing real people doing real things. You know, yes, it's a film and it's either fabricated or written or fictional, but it's still, you're seeing these people. And
yeah.
That's so much more interesting than seeing something that's computer generated that, you know, that was never real to begin with. So
yeah, I very much agree with that. Some of the, oh my gosh, because for me, I don't know that I could claim to have the best imagination. I see the reality of things. So when I watch a movie with CGI, I don't actually see, okay, so a perfect example of that, we just watched it on Netflix, was that new Jungle Book movie, Mowgli.
Oh, yeah.
Everything is, over the top CGI, and I can't think of his name. Cumberbatch, he's in it. And I don't actually see a tiger, Shere Khan. What I see is an actor in a suit with little dots all over him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I see when I watch those movies. I picture how the actor moved with this giant suit on, with a bunch of little sensors all over his body, and in front of a giant green screen with a big foam rock. That's what I see when I watch movies like that. It's just, you know, I'm not very imaginative. And I get that they can do all kinds of different things now with computers and all sorts of, like, the CGI technology and that. And it's, you know, it's really cool for them. It's just not as interesting for me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, even when they use, you know, when they're doing CGI-ing, you know, characters' faces on them, it's like, it's not real. I mean, again, going back, sorry to keep going back to the idea of a soul, but you're missing that component that's so important to what you're capturing in a camera.
Yeah.
That's what makes great acting. And that's what makes, you know, people interesting to look at is when you're able to look right in their eyes and see, you know, something way beyond, you know, the physical realm.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea there. I think it's so true though, because you're missing out on a lot of this, because so a lot of my parts, they're pretty skilled artists. We can draw a realistic eyeball. That doesn't make it a real eyeball though. It makes it a drawing of a real eyeball. And that's kind of what we get from that with in regards to all of the, like, fake CGI stuff that they're doing, because it's different. We look at fabrication and makeup artists and that sort of thing as a very different thing, because that's still real. That's still there. You put in however many hours or days or weeks of work to build this giant massive set instead of, like, I have a green screen. Like, I have a green screen that I use when some of my parts want to play with certain things, when they're messing with certain things. We got it online. A friend of ours sent it to us as a gift, actually. So I can do that too. And I think it's, like, it's not as fun.
Yeah. And it's not to take away from what people are able to do with the computer, but you know, like when I'm watching a film, I want to see real people in front of the lens, you know, at the very least. Like, it is interesting what you can do with the backgrounds, and, you know, you can take somebody from, you know, put somebody in Hawaii, and then next thing you know, you can put them in space.
Right.
You know, with a click of a mouse. But yeah, I mean, my thing is, as long as the person is real, I mean, I'm all for it. So.
Yeah, it's a cool technology. It is, but people overutilize it, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's been overused.
And I mean, back when it was still in its more primal state, they were still being forced to, you know, integrate real life special effects with what they were doing with the computer, because they couldn't do it all on the computer.
Right.
You know, it was a mixture, and I thought that worked. That always, you know, worked beautifully.
I agree with that.
Something too reliant on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think what you just said there, the relying on it, I think that's the difference now for me too. Is that, like, the mix of it when they were first starting, and even after they got a couple years under their belt of, like, progressing through the technology and how to utilize it best. I think that worked. I think some of those movies were really cool. They were really entertaining, but there was still a person there, and I didn't have to, like, I don't know. I I don't know where I'm going with that. It just bugs me is yeah. the main point.
Yeah, I mean, the point I'm trying to make is, you know, I like, you know, real locations, real actors, yes. real situations, you know, that's what I do. I mean, people can do, you know, they can make whatever films they want to make, but, you know, the films I want to make are real act, you know, real characters, real actors, real people, you right. know, real sets, real places.
Right.
And then kind of just build from there and, you know, and I mean, there's, I love the challenge of trying to get that in the camera as well, you know, trying to, whatever, I don't know where I'm going with that, but, you know, like if there's a special effect, like trying to get that in camera as well.
Yeah.
You know, like capturing like a real fire or real smoke as opposed right. to just, you know, making it on a computer, because that adds another element to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we very much agree with it. We actually have a friend who, talking about special effects and fire and that sort of thing and getting it on camera. We have a friend, she's a hoop dancer. She does like hoop yoga, she does classes and stuff, but she's a performer and she actually has LED and fire hoops. And we try to get together with her once or twice a year to photograph her just because it's really fun.
Yeah.
But sure. there's always someone who said, well, why don't you just do it digitally? Because it's not as cool as the flames, five different flames yeah. whipping around her. That's really cool to watch.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I could just toss a little digital flame on there after the fact, but that's just not as cool.
Exactly.
It's far more amusing to say, yeah, she is wicked awesome at what she does. And I didn't have yeah. to digitally do it later. We just did it a second or third time.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there on the happier, amusing little rant that we both just had on film.
Yeah. I don't know how we got there, but yeah.
We just kept progressing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of a podcast, right? You just
yep.
keep going.
Yep, we just keep going and we talk about whatever we want because it's our podcast. All right, everybody, we're going to go ahead and cut it out here. Thank you again to Matthew Roth for coming on the We and Me podcast and chatting about his recent film, five-piece movie, and some of the upcoming projects he has. Matthew, before we get off here, can you tell everybody where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, I am on Twitter at SuperMats. That's super_ and then MATS. That goes the same for Instagram. Or you for Twitter, too, you can check Erica's page. I know she's retweeted me a couple times too, and just
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just Matthew Roth on Facebook. Also too, before we end this, I also want to let people know that we are going to be playing in Los Angeles. Five Piece will be premiering in Los Angeles in February. Keep your eyes out for that. And also too, I mean, if you're interested in learning more about the film or following it, please follow Five Piece Movie on Facebook and Five Piece Movie on Twitter, as well as Instagram too. But I try to post as many updates as I can on the Facebook and the Twitter. You know, that's the two easy ones. So that'll keep you up to date on where you might be able to see it. And where, you know, we're also, I want to say close to distribution, but at the same time, I don't know. I mean, there's a couple of companies that have shown interest, but you know, until we sign the contracts, you know, we don't really, I don't right. count on anything until that's happened. So, yeah. But there has been some interest in it. And again, in February, we will be playing in Los Angeles. So if you're in the area, definitely come and check it out.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thanks for sharing that with everybody. And again, if you wanted to find Five Piece on Twitter, you can do that at Five Piece Movie. All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
I have a tragic story and some people I despise. I have my villains, names in shadow and the sights that will ensue. I have a history so hollow and a story to tell you. Eventually our hero boy forgets and breaks away. His mind wasn't meant for this, he's lying, he ain't okay. Eventually our hero boy will forget he has a soul. And eventually our hero boy, his heart will take the toll. Eventually our hero boy will take what he has known. He'll use his newfound strength to let you know you're not alone. Smile again, getting there was quite a bend, but he's okay now.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the We and Me podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you're listening on if you enjoy the show. Big thanks to Adam from Compulsive Inc. This is his original song, Rogue. Adam is a member of the DID community that reached out to us via Stevie's call for musicians on Twitter. So go check out Compulsive Inc. on YouTube via the link in the description box below. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.